in their government from that era in the 60s and 70s where they had similar events happen. So I think what the ETs were trying to say is, look, we're watching this and we're concerned about it, but if you go to mutual assured destruction, we can neutralize that capability. Now, you could take that as an act of enlightened self-interest or even wisdom, or you could take that as interfering with our military readiness and make an enemy out of them. So you can spin this story two ways. What I'm saying to people is that we need to step back and look at the larger human problem and look at how that might appear through the eyes of another civilization out there.
You know, I've been doing shows like this for a long time and not nearly had the contacts you have on high-level government positions and military and probably even corporate areas, but I get the unsettling feeling in the past couple of years that there's a group of these people, these so-called experts, these so-called movers and shakers that thinks we can take on these extraterrestrials in a military fashion.
Right.
It's very disturbing.
Well, it is. And the thing is...
I mean, why do they even think that?
Well,
I guess that
I had a Navy intelligence guy, when I asked him this question back in the 90s, he says, you know, it's kind of like dogs peeing on the fence post. It's like marking territory. He says, it's dumb, it's arrogant, it's just a mindset that's out there. Now, with that said, the vast majority of folks that I've done briefings at the Pentagon for the head of intelligence for the Joint Staff, the J-2 position, I've done briefings for the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is the most powerful intelligence entity at the Pentagon. And I've been personally there with some of our military witnesses and my military advisor. And most of these men, in the first place, don't have any knowledge of these projects. In the second place, don't control them. And in the third place, are very supportive of disclosure when they that they are being left out of the loop and that this is being run by a rogue transnational group that are literally endangering the future of the human race. So what I say to people is that remember that the vast, vast majority of people in the intelligence and military community are victims of this game as much or more so than the average American.
I've noticed just the little contact we do that people and I don't know 100% for sure, but we bet the farm on that they have security connections either with the Defense Department or some other agency. Many of them would like to see disclosure. I get that feeling.
Yes, they do.
And they'd talk more, except evidently the price is pretty high to pay. How did you get all these people to talk?
Well, first of all, we identified them over a number of years. Then we put them together as a group. And before we went forward, we had people, both high-placed people in the public, but also people within the covert circle. As I mentioned, there's about half of this so-called MJ-12 group support getting this out, who have extended protection to us. And, you know, one of the interesting things about this is that none of these people who've come forward with us have even gotten a phone call saying, be quiet, not one. And there's a reason for that that I don't really want to go into in an interview. But suffice it to say, we've had meetings where we've put that kind of security and authorization for enforcement of that security in place. And our view of it is that, you know, they may not support what we're doing in all cases, but they need to stay out of the way of it.
We have just a few minutes left, and we are going to talk about the book when we close the show. And we do have a link here where people can buy it on the website and some information and over to your websites as well. And they need to take time to read about Dr. Stephen Greer. It's an interesting life, and I wish, and in a future show, we're going to discuss maybe your early contacts.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because that is part of the mantle of the man, so to speak, in my opinion. But I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up CSETI. You founded that, right?
Right. The parent organization for the Disclosure Project is CSETI, and people can see that at CSETI.org. And it was started in 1990 as a interplanetary ambassador program, for lack of a better concept. I concluded that these ET vehicles were real. I concluded that they were wanting to have contact in a peaceful fashion with humans, that they had done so over many decades, and that we needed to put teams of people together. And so what we do is that we train people in what I call the CE5 initiative, or Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind initiative, where we take people out under the stars and teach them techniques and protocols for preparing themselves to make contact with these objects or with the occupants of these objects in a very broad paradigm. We're using not only lasers and electromagnetic signals, but we're using remote viewing and consciousness and some really very avant-garde concepts. Because what we've concluded, and this is one of the interesting conversations I had with the CIA director's wife, who I recount in this book, Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, is that she said, how are they communicating across the vast distances of space that are, you know, many, many thousands of light years? And I said, well, they're not using AT&T electromagnetic signals. And I began to discuss the fact that there's a nexus where consciousness, what we might call mind stuff, and thought and electromagnetism comes together. And it's a very interesting area of science, and it is a legitimate science. And that can be utilized for both communication and imaging of off-planet operations and extraterrestrial craft. Their systems easily interface with what we would call coherent thoughts, like a laser is coherent light. Their systems interface with that as easily as you and I pick up a cell phone. Now, I remind people, even though that sounds outrageous to some folks, if you were to show someone a cell phone 500 years ago, you'd be burned at the stake as a witch because it would look like magic, never mind a television camera or even a flashlight for that matter. So we're dealing with civilizations whose technologies have gone through the light barrier into these other, some would say, dimensions, but in a scientifically reproducible fashion.
Hey, do you have any kind of clue about what their civilizations are like?
Yes, we do. And that's a long discussion, but let's just say that they are further apart from how they're living on a day-to-day basis than we are from cavemen. And I think that this is why you have to avoid an anthropocentric projection onto the extraterrestrial phenomenon, because we're dealing with a whole set of values and technologies and capabilities that are quite advanced. And, you know, many of these people have ideas, oh, they need to come here because they need their sperm and eggs, or they need to mine gold, or we're going to be slaves mining gold for them, like some of Zachariah Sitchin's ideas. And I'm going, you know what? If you understand what their technologies are, you understand that they can manifest pure gold out of the substrate of space-time easily. They certainly don't need us to mine it for them. So we're dealing with a whole new science, and a lot of this book that I just put out deals with this, a description of what the technologies that the ETs have are and how they interface with matter, space and time, and thought and consciousness. And that is a really key part of the understanding for people to get their minds around if they're going to go out, and this is what we encourage people. In fact, we're going to be at Mount Shasta in California over Labor Day, and then here in Virginia near our farm here near Monticello, near Thomas Jefferson's home in October, for about a week at each place, so taking people out under the stars. And people can find out about that if they are interested at csetti.org.
Well, good. We urge people to go over there. Sorry, our time's up. But
it was wonderful speaking with you.
And we look forward to talking to you again. And in the book, is it getting the reaction you thought it would or needed?
Oh, yes. It's been very widely supported.
Because it's not easy writing a book.
Yes, and this book was actually dictated and then had to be written from about 45 hours of oral audio tape.
I mean, people, you know, I know people read a lot of books every week. And I think that's great. And another way, from the little bit of writing I do, it's a shame that they can go through what takes hours and years of sweat sometimes in a matter of a day or two. But your book's a great read.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Greer.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. We've been talking with Dr. Stephen Greer. He's been on the line with us from his home near Charlottesville, Virginia. The name of the book, again, is Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge. We'll have to have him back soon, for sure. Thank you for listening, everyone. This program was produced and edited by the lovely Jane Swartley. Until next time. This is Jerry Pippen saying, cheers.